How should people of goodwill vote on the net neutrality issue? Find out after listening to this uprising.
You got your levels now?
Yes, I do.
LibertyNation.com. They're the resistance, but we are the uprising with Scott Cosenza and Tim Donner.
There's not going to be a President Donald Trump.
Hey, a president! Can you believe it?
I love the poorly educated.
The voters have guaranteed themselves slavery, economic disaster.
I can't believe I'm losing to this guy.
You could put half of Trump's supporters into what I call the basket of deplorables.
Lordy, I hope there are tapes.
I have never met with Russians.
Putin is continuing to advance into
Korea.
Gee, it's amazing that the Russians have been able to influence four special elections.
This is Scott Cosenza for LibertyNation.com with the Uprising podcast, and I'm joined today by Nathan Steelwater. And Nathan and I had a bit of a back and forth online going with the time-honored debate now of whether net neutrality is good or bad for the body politic, for liberty in America. And Nathan has taken, and I believe I'm hoping certainly for this conversation, Nathan, that you will take the same position, which is that net neutrality is good for the body politic, or net good, no pun intended. And I am prepared to argue the opposite. So with that said, you did it nicely in print, Nathan, so would you do it now for us and tell everybody what the sort of nuts and bolts of net neutrality are and what they mean?
Sure thing. So net neutrality is basically the idea that the internet should be free and open and that all data on the internet should be treated equally.
Now, let me
essentially, the way the internet works for those that may not exactly know is that it's just a connection between a bunch of computers, and data packets are sent to and from different computers. Internet service providers, ISPs, are the ones who basically own the wires or the wireless capability for those packets to be transferred from computer to computer. So net neutrality is the concept that all of those data packets should be treated equally by those ISPs. And it covers a specific core concept.
Let me just get into two things here.
Sure.
The first is, I just don't want anybody to be confused. When you say, initially you said that the people want the net to be free, that's about sort of free access, not cost-free. They're not arguing
correct,
for...
Correct, free, right. Free access.
Yes.
Yeah, not free as in I don't have to pay for it.
Right.
Free as in free access. It's free and open as in it's almost kind of like the Wild West a little bit, or at least what we like to believe the Wild West was. Free and open in regards as free use while on there, not free, no purchase price.
And what would the penalties be for a computer company, or excuse me, an ISP who wanted to go ahead and not have this or honor this under these provisions? Would they be able to continue to operate?
So prior to net neutrality rules being enacted during the Obama administration, and this was basically done by making ISPs a common carrier under Title II of the Communications Act of, I believe, 34. It basically made them public utility.
Mm-hmm.
But basically what would happen is if an ISP didn't want to follow these rules, they wouldn't be shut down, they would be fined, and they would have to obviously correct themselves. But it's not like a, no, you have to shutter your doors, you don't get to be a business anymore.
Okay. Well, if you'd like to continue, why do you think this is, and so you're generally somebody who believes in smaller government as I do, and you are for liberty and freedom for the individual, and yet you want to see this legislation enacted, which gives an increase in government control to some, you know, to where that control hasn't been in the past. Can you defend that? Well, first of all, have I stated those positions correctly? And if so, can you defend them, please?
Yeah, sure. So just to kind of hair split a little bit, I'm not saying that I'm promoting additional legislation. I'm actually promoting slightly less legislation, but keeping the general rules and concepts that were enacted during the Obama administration rules change the same. So during the Obama administration, the FCC reclassified ISPs as common carriers. So they basically applied to the same rules as all the utility companies that currently exist. Now, the ISPs argue that this is cost prohibitive and it's, you know, against innovation and competition. And in the regards of treating them like a public utility, I agree. I do not, however, agree with that we should not have net neutrality rules in general. Because as you know, Scott, every opinion has nuance. So while I am pro-net neutrality, I'm not necessarily pro-Title II net neutrality.
So perhaps then you're saying that the mechanism by which they're doing it is not something you'd necessarily approve of, but the thing they're doing or attempting to do, try to ensure this data packet non-discrimination, is something that you generally favor.
Yes, exactly. You know, and I think the reason that the FCC under the Obama administration went the way that it did was it was an expedient way of doing it, because the only other way to do it is to have a net neutrality law of some kind.
Yes, well, we know
like
that
many
the,
other countries do.
We know the immediate past president was not a patient man when it came to convincing others of the value of his preferred policy prescriptions. So it's not surprising that they would just sort of shoehorn it in. And that's, I think it's fair to say that that's what they did.
Well, and not,
go ahead.
And not just that, but, you know, with any form of partisanship, you know, much like anything that President Trump is trying to do, the Democrats will oppose. And much like anything President Obama tried to do, for good or ill, mostly ill, the Republicans would try to oppose. So, you know, any type of lawmaking process, regardless of whether you have congressional support or not, is a long, drawn-out process. And so I think the FCC kind of just wanted to get it done quickly and do something that they didn't have to worry about, you know, Congress and whatever lobbyists are involved and all that minutia. And it, you know, allowed the Obama administration to push the agenda that they had, one which I surprisingly agree with, in an expedient way where they wouldn't have to worry about opposition or, well, nuance.
Right, right. Do you think that this was – I have a theory that this is driven in large part by companies that don't want to lose out on their own business let me restate that. I think that a large measure of support for this is driven by companies who fear that if it is not enacted, that is to say, if the ISPs are allowed to have discriminatory practices with respect to data, that either their customers will then have to pony up more cash for their prioritization of their own data, or they'll find other ways to access their products. And I'm thinking here chiefly about Netflix versus the cable companies. And just for people who don't know this, I mean, there was sort of a lot of talk about this issue a while back, because when you know, Comcast is obviously, you know, they own NBC, they own a ton of video production and delivery properties. And they also, through Comcast, they own some huge percentage of the high-speed internet delivery mechanisms that that people get their internet from. And so the fear for Netflix was, if Comcast can say, oh, well, we're going to slow down Netflix traffic or not allow it or whatever, that they're going to be able to sell their own TV product more successfully and people are going to drop Netflix, which I think is true. They would be able to do that, except for the fact where, and I can tell you this as a person who does subscribe both to Netflix and to Comcast internet service, if I couldn't access my Netflix as I preferred over that network, I would drop the Comcast internet service and I would call Verizon or one of the other competitors that are available to me, and I would choose, you know, a different option. So my question for you, Nathan, is the market, you know, okay, so let's say, take it this. Yeah. Was this in response to any particular problem? Is there an example of where it actually, there was data discrimination that did damage people or upset them to the point where they were agitating for this legislation? And so let's take that first, actually.
Sure. So there actually have been examples of discriminatory practices by ISPs, specifically in relation to squeezing out their competition. So the Madison River Communications Company, so it's a smaller, more, you know, regional-based ISP.
Sure.
They restricted their customers' access to Vonage. Vonage, of course, being, you know, a rival service.
Right.
Another instance was AT&T, limited access to FaceTime. And if you're familiar, AT&T is basically the sole provider for communications with iPhones. So AT&T was limiting access to FaceTime unless its users basically paid for higher-priced data plans. There were other options were, I believe it was Sprint, Verizon, and AT&T. There were several of the larger, essentially duopoly of telecom that were restricting access to Google Wallet because it was competitive to one of their own products that they were starting to push. And to answer the original question that you had, you know, did this come from basically people whose businesses wouldn't exist? As you know, I'm a proponent of the free market, and generally as little regulation as possible, the better. You know, the market can decide, let the invisible hand move and work the way that it will. However, a market is only truly free if competition is allowed to exist. And it's not like you're walking down the street, you see one store's prices are one thing, another store's prices are another, and then you choose from there. Because when we're talking about the internet, we're talking about access to information. So if one side of the street is completely blocked from your view, you don't even know that competition exists. And that's one of the main concerns with net neutrality, that without net neutrality protections, ISPs would essentially be able to limit their customers' access to the very information that competition even exists. And especially since we currently essentially have a duopoly, we've got the big three ISPs, you know, you got Time Warner, you got Comcast, and you have Verizon, you know, AT&T, and they're all in there, right? But you have several very large ISPs that have essentially broken the U.S. up into regions that they primarily cover. And if you have, you know, let's say you and I, we start an ISP, right? Net neutrality doesn't exist. You and I don't like it. And, you know, we want to offer our customers open use internet with no restrictions. Mm-hmm. So we start free internet solutions. Well, how are we going to market to our customers, right? We've got television, we've got radio, we've got print media, and we have the internet, the most commonly used medium currently. Now, you know, television is fairly expensive, doesn't have wide reach. Radio, little cheaper than TV, doesn't have wide reach. But let's say we start to grab, you know, our little area. We've got our region, we're open, we're working. As soon as one of these other ISPs, these bigger ones, realize that we're encroaching on their territory, literally all they have to do is just limit access to our website, and then people don't even know we exist. We can't expand.
Well, how isn't this curable just by a simple requirement that if ISPs are going to do something other than give open internet, which I think most people think that they're buying when they, you know, when they initiate service with an ISP, I think most people are thinking, and let me just say this as an attorney, forget about what's in that, the terms of service. Nobody's reading those terms of service, and I don't think that...
Yeah, when's the last time you read a terms of service?
Yeah, well, exactly. Believe it or not, I bought a piece of software for work yesterday, and I actually did click on to read the terms of service, because while I'm comfortable being somebody who's irresponsible with those measures personally, like ever the rest of the world, for professional reasons, I like to at least give it a look-see to see what I'm, you know, signing for in other people's names. Anyway,
exactly.
It was longer than a house purchase contract, or I mean, just something, some of the longer contracts I've drafted or signed. Anyway, and it was just a piece like $15 or $20 software, and I gave up on it. By the way, I did give it a skim, but I was like, all right, you know. So I don't think that's realistic. But why why couldn't we just say that unless you indicate otherwise, if you want access to the whatever it's called, the stream, the tier one, the you know, the main vein, if you want access to that data stream, you're going to have to say, all right, we will give non-discrimination unless it's abundantly disclosed or signed off on or something like that. In other words, I get what you're saying. Look, we've got this potential problem out there, even though I don't think that it is really that serious, because I just don't think that's how the world works. But let's just say that that's exactly how it worked. Why couldn't we cure that by the less invasive regulation of just saying, okay, we need a truth in labeling law?
So, like anything, right? What's the applicability? So how do we apply that? So if we're going to look at a truth in labeling law, obviously your terms of service agreement isn't going to work. It's going to be 1,000 pages long. It's going to have to be revised every time they block another service or they restrict another service, and people just aren't going to read it. So if we go with truth in labeling law, how do we go about that? Because every unless you're specifically listing, well, this is why we're blocking them and this is who we're blocking, there's still no idea. So let's go with our same example. you know, we've got Cosenza Communications, and AT&T is going to restrict access for Cosenza Communications. So what, they just list, we restrict access to Cosenza Communications? If I haven't been able to see who Cosenza Communications is to begin with, to know that they're a competitor to AT&T, the name doesn't even matter.
But how about we just say this, I think I mentioned this in print. One thing I think is very successful is the nutritional information that's required on, you know, food that we buy in the market, right? If you produce more than some small, minor amount of food production, you have to have this nutritional label. It gives you calories, serving size, whatever. Recommended, you know. We all know it.
Right.
Well, doesn't that fix the problem? In other words, you do a little cube. Do you discriminate against data? Yes or no? That's in box one, right? However you want to word the question. And then box two can be, all right, go to this link to find out exactly how or the measures. It seems to me like when you come back to me on this argument, it's almost like you're saying that your fellow customers, your fellow Americans and ISP customers are insufficiently jealous of this, you know, feature to getting data discriminatorily without discrimination, and because of that, then you're willing to do this, you know, to add this government layer of regulation. I guess that's my main sort of in opposition to it. You're inviting really this government body, and I'll close with this, and I'll give you the last word in a moment. You know, the FCC has a long history of doing one thing and being a censor. They are all about censoring content, censoring people. I can remember the sort of Howard Stern wars back in the 80s, and they shut him down. And the morning DJs, who were wildly popular in the market, but they weren't wildly popular with some people in the audience who you know, wanted them shut down because they didn't like what they were saying. So they got the FCC to do it. So anyway, I think that we should keep that camel's nose out of the tent. I'll leave you with the last word, Nathan.
So, while I think some of your description is a little reductive, I'm generally inclined to agree that heavy-handed government regulation is not the way to go. And if any type of rules or regulations that come with, you know, net neutrality are going to be enforced, and believe it or not, some of the big three ISPs are actually calling for Congress to be the ones to decide how exactly we're going to do net neutrality. And mostly the issue is the current rules treat them, you know, use an 80-year-old communications law and treat them like a public utility, and the law was created before the internet even existed. So even Verizon, Comcast, AT&T, they're calling for, you know, clear and definitive legislation to cover what it is, and not just, you know, sticky FCC rules. I think if we're going to have legislation or regulation of any kind, it needs to be as bare bones as possible. And specifically, it just needs to be that, you know, ISPs will treat all data equally, to include, you know, no blocking or throttling, or pay for fast lanes, because it's not just an economic competitive issue. The internet is the single most open and freest forum and exchange of information that we have. And even in the last election, we've seen the immense power of people's ability to use the internet to affect social and political change. And yes, while our free speech protections are protected from the government and not from corporations, and, you know, they're free to do as they wish if we use their service like Facebook, editing your stuff, things like that. The internet, by and large, is free from censorship. And our government, in its entire dealings with the internet, to include the rules put in place by the FCC under the Obama era, were to guarantee that that openness remains intact. I personally do not want my ability to receive information or my ability to, you know, make my political voice known in what is the largest used medium that we have, to be dictated by a corporation or by a price plan.
Okay, Nathan, well, I said I would give you the last word, and I think you got it, and then some. So thanks so much for joining us, and thanks, everybody, for listening. Hopefully you can visit libertynation.com to read more good stuff like Nathan and I wrote this week, and stay tuned for more engaging episodes of The Uprising. Ciao.